Hey, if you're hearing that music, then you know it's time for an edition of Spiritual Perspectives. Spiritual Perspectives, where we take a look at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. I'm Scott Bartlett. I'll be your host. And I will let you know that we will archive this program on www.ifidknownthen.com. We have an absolutely fun guest, and for those of you that don't know, we broadcast out of San Francisco, and as well as being internet streaming all across the world. And our guest today is actually sort of local here in the Bay Area, up in Marin County. She's been a lifelong student of Christian Science. In fact, her family has studied this route to healing and spirituality for a very long time, with a number of dramatic events, even though she started into her world out of college working in human resources and business levels. At a certain point, people begin to actually be asking her for support in their own healing process, and she transitioned from the W-2 work world into being a full-time spiritual healing practitioner. So everybody, I'd like to introduce you to Ann Neeland. Ann, this is everybody.
Hello. Good morning, everyone. Or whatever time of day it is for you.
Oh, yeah, good point. Isn't it nice we could get them all together at once?
Yes.
Fabulous. So, Ann, you've got a multi-generational family history with Christian Science, right?
Yes. My great-grandfather had a dramatic healing, which brought the family into the study of Christian Science.
Can you give us any more without, you know, any sort of confidentiality?
Sure. Conrad Helin lived, he was a stalwart Swedish fellow who lived in Rockford, Illinois, and loved his daily walk. And at one point, the doctors kindly informed him that they were going to have to amputate his foot because of gangrene.
Oof.
And my dad remembers this from his boyhood. He remembers going to Grandpa's house during this trauma, and the bed was downstairs, not upstairs in the bedroom, because Grandpa couldn't climb the stairs, and the curtains were drawn, and everyone was speaking in whispers. And at one point, my great-grandfather said to his wife, "Hilda, it's time to call your sister," who lived in Chicago and had become a student of Christian Science. And so she came, and Dad says the next time he visited Grandpa's house, the curtains were drawn, the bed was back upstairs, everyone was talking and laughing, the sun was streaming in, and Grandpa's foot was completely restored. And that interested the whole family in the study of this spiritual method of healing that relies upon Christ Jesus' practice and teachings and example.
And so he had not been studying this before and found it during that time period when, well, quite frankly, gangrene was foot-threatening and life-threatening.
Yes. No, he was not a student of it at all. And when his sister-in-law came, she, through her understanding of God and his healing ideas, his Christ, as still here, just completely lifted that whole sense of fear in the household and restored the God-given sense of harmony and health. And it became tangible in his completely restored foot.
Boy, that would be certainly enough to get your attention.
Yes.
Given that medicine had no cure for gangrene other than get it off your body by taking that piece away.
Mm-hmm.
Phew. And so that kind of like rotated your whole family into, once they'd had a genuine demonstration it was real, your family kind of like picked up the ball from there?
Yes. My grandmother, who was the daughter of this man who'd been healed, she by that time was a grown woman with a children of her own, my dad. She became quite interested in it, and she herself became a Christian Science practitioner, someone who helps people find healing through through prayer, and many people were healed through her understanding of this Christly way of learning about God and God's infinite presence and power and love. I remember, I don't know too much about her practice. They keep Christian Science practitioners, as doctors, have their practice confidential. But I do remember there was one person who had been so severely burned and was just very quickly restored through prayer.
Fabulous. And then I have a note here that said that your mom visited a Christian Science Sunday school at 12.
Yes, that's right.
Found out that they had answers she wanted.
That's right. That's right. She, her family were members of another Christian church and went every Sunday, and her mom was a soloist in that church. They were quite involved in it. And at one point, my mother's friend, with whom she was having a sleepover, invited her to come to Sunday school with her. And Mom was 12, and she heard about God in a way that she hadn't understood God before, as infinite love, tender love, all-powerful good, only creating and causing good for his, her children, and herself as created to be good, and it's 100% good. And these concepts felt to her just like fresh sunshine, just like gentle rain, just washing fear away. And at age 12, she thought, this is what I want. This is the way I want to know God. This is the way I want to know myself. And so she adopted Christian Science as her religion, and eventually her whole family became interested in it and became students of Christian Science themselves.
So on your dad's side and then on your mom's side, it was sort of coincidental that that each side kind of found Christian Science as being the spiritual understanding that fit for them.
Yes. Because it worked, it not only gave them a new view of God as right here, infinite love, causing only that which is pure and spiritual and healthy and safe. It actually had an effect in their a physical effect in their daily lives. They could see that just like in Jesus' practice, it healed. It changed things. As thought was changed and fear was removed, the body was healed.
And then this won't mean anything to our California-raised residents, but your folks were in the Midwest, right?
That's right, yes. Mom was in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and my father was in a town outside Chicago, Illinois, in Rockford, Illinois, where all the Swedes were gathering back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very close to Lake Wobegon, as it turns out.
Yes, I think so.
But the thing that struck, because I grew up in the area, Kansas City area. I grew up in Kansas, in the outskirts of Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And getting a Midwestern person to alter the direction of their thought process is not as easy as introducing new sushi places in California.
That's right. I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and I think the license plate frame says the show me state.
Yep. I won't believe it till you show me.
That's right. And that's the wonderful thing about this, I have found, about this spiritual practice and understanding of God, is that it shows me. I can see results from it. I've had wonderful healings myself and for my children and in my Christian Science practice for others.
I picked up on that because you cruised right by it. You said, yep, she got interested because it works.
Yes.
And so there's a fun place I want to touch into, because we're talking about healing And we're talking a lot about the fact that, our world is becoming overcome by fear, and we need to actually overcome the fear by reconnecting spiritually. But one piece I like to touch on is I really like to reinforce that healing is not a thing to be reserved for disease.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's not a thing to be reserved for gangrene or wounds or injuries specifically, although we just heard you describe that it's not to exclude that. Where have you seen spiritual or Christian Science or Mary Baker Eddy-based healing, where have you seen that have effects, Anne, in terms of life areas?
Yes. Well, it kind of follows the path that the master healer walked ahead of us, Christ Jesus. If we think about his life, he healed sin. He healed without words a dishonest tax collector who had made a fortune on being dishonest, Zacchaeus. He healed a woman who had been caught in the act of adultery and just completely freed her from that sense of condemnation and set her free to go forward. And then he saw the connection between what I would call off-target thinking and disease or sickness. One time when someone who was paralyzed was brought in front of him, the first thing he said was, "Your sins are forgiven you." And the people around thought, what's he talking about? Why is he forgiving sins? This guy's paralyzed. And he realized that this man, according to the Jewish teachings of that day, probably was laboring under the thought that God was cursing him and punishing him because he was so sinful, and that is why he was paralyzed. Mm. Well, I have found in my own life a connection between... Actually, this is a method of prayer. The first chapter of the Christian Science textbook is prayer, and it shows the connection between living a life that is Christ-like, or we might say pure, unselfed love, and feeling a connection with God, which results in healing. I discovered this when I was in sixth grade, with a healing of a wart, if you'd like to hear about something so simple as a sixth grader's healing of a wart.
I love it.
Yeah. I was probably 11 at that time, and I had this big wart on my thumb, and I fed it with a lot of attention and resentment and hatred, and it thrived, and it got bigger. And
which in sixth grade is socially debilitating.
Oh, yes. And then one day, it had been there for well over a year. One day, I thought, oh, because I attended Christian Science Sunday School then, and I thought I could pray about this as I'm learning to do, and it could actually be healed. And so this is a very helpful idea in healing to me, is to turn the thing, what seems to be this terrible, fearful thing, into thoughts, what kind of thoughts it might represent, and then to exchange those for God's good ideas. So I thought, well, let's see, hard, ugly. Am I thinking any hard and ugly thoughts? And I thought, oops, yes, I am. And I thought about this friend in sixth grade who I was criticizing and talking about her behind her back, and just being generally sixth gradish. And,
yeah, I was going to say pretty normal.
Yeah, and I thought, well, that's pretty hard and ugly. I don't want to have anything to do with that. And so I thought, I won't do that anymore. I'm just going to stop that. And instead, I'm going to know that God made me as His daughter, beautiful and pure and gentle and kind and good. And I'm not going to be inconsistent with that by continuing to look at or feel this thing. I'm going to not touch it, not look at it, and I'm going to just know the way God made me. And so and to stop thinking the thoughts that were not good. And I did, and a week later it was completely gone. So that that showed me that bringing thought into line with spiritual reality, the only reality there is really, the way God made things, the way God made things, all pure good, and man, all of us, in his image and likeness, the way the first chapter of Genesis tells us, bringing thought into line with that and being consistent with it acts it out in your body, because your body just acts out your thought.
So I want to, excuse me, goodness, I want to reinforce a couple of things that I heard in that in terms of technique-y. First, I noticed that you weren't busy focused on go away, wart, be gone, wart, you're bad, go away, wart. You weren't focused on the thing you wanted gone.
Exactly. That is such a good point. Yes. We turn away from the body to truth and love, and those are other biblical names for God.
And then I heard you say that what you did was look at what kind of associated thinking you might have and set about to untangle those associated thoughts, or those, in this case, the crap you'd been doing sixth grade-y style about this person, but you set about to sort of excise those thoughts that you would associate to that, and to instead bring yourself back on track with pureness, wholeness, love, good, God.
Yes, that you nailed it. That's right. We can't say, oh God, you made me good, you made me beautiful, and then be thinking and living a different way. It has to be consistent.
And so if I were to take this apart, And just for the listening audience, I was not raised in Christian Science. I've been being educated in Christian Science with the wonderful people I get to talk to. For me to take this apart, I kind of get a picture that if we figure out where we're off track and we really dedicate ourselves to coming back into alignment with being on track, the off-track stuff no longer has to be there.
That's right, because it's kind of like, you know, Christian Science has that word science in there, which is kind of a unusual combination for some ears.
Yes.
It's like, let's use math as an example. Say I have a really wrong answer on my math test. What do I do to correct it? Do I focus on the mistake? Do I repeat the mistake? Do I think about that wrong understanding that led me to that mistake? No, I go back to the math. I go back to the truth. And I reason out from the truth. And then when I come back through that problem again, the mistake is no longer there. And the result, spiritually, is healing. And on my math paper, it's the correct answer. So what corrects, whether it's sin, off-track thinking, or fear, as we're talking about today, or a physical difficulty, disease, or sickness of any kind, what corrects it is reasoning out from the basis of God's perfection and love. It's like Jesus said. He said it so succinctly. He said, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free."
And I found along the way that there's one other become important to me quote in that same Bible. I grew up in a Christian Protestant church, and I noticed that I may have heard this one along the way, and, you know, the enforced Bible reading that I resented so much as a teenager that I appreciate so much now. But there's also a place where Jesus is referenced as having said, and I'll quote this badly, "All these things I do, so shall ye do, and greater shall ye do in the name of God your Father."
That's right. Yes, he said that if you believe in me, and we're going to come back to that word believe, because it's not just blind faith. He said, "Those who believe on me, the works that I do shall they do also, and greater works than these shall they do. So he had this strong promise for those who believed on him. And if we look up that word believe in the original language, you know, the Bible wasn't written in English, it was written in Hebrew.
Which comes as a shock to some folks.
Yeah. If we look up the original meaning, it meant to be firm and constant, to be faithful, to understand and practice something. So he wasn't just saying, oh, I believe, that kind of belief. It was actually to understand and then be firm and faithful in practicing what he taught. And I want to circle back to something. We've talked about this one off-target thinking as being a possible cause, and untangling that as leading it to a path for healing. But that's not always what we're dealing with. The Christian Science textbook mentions two other causes for sickness in the human mind. Sin is one, and that's the one word for what we've been talking about, off-target thinking. But she also mentions Mary Baker Eddy, who's the founder and discoverer of Christian Science and wrote the Christian Science textbook to help us understand the healing ideas in the Bible. And the name of the textbook is Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. She also mentions fear or ignorance as leading to sickness and disease. So we don't always have to go on a witch hunt and say, oh, you know, I'm so bad. Why am I suffering? Because I'm so bad. Sometimes it's that fear has control, and sometimes it's just ignorance of God. And the good news is that all three things are cleared up and solved by understanding and sticking with what Jesus taught of the nature of God and what the whole Bible teaches us in its inspired messages, the nature of God as love, as good, as right here, as having all the power. Would you like me to share a healing that I had myself when the issue was fear?
I would love that, but can I slip in one question first?
Sure, absolutely.
I really want to reinforce that the point you just brought forward was that when we've got stuff that's twisted out of shape in our lives, it does not mean that some old, long-bearded dude in a chair is mad at us and punishing us.
That is just exactly right. And
it was pretty crudely phrased, thanks.
Yes, no, but actually, that was, unfortunately, the Jewish theology before Jesus came along, that if you had some kind of bodily problem, they reasoned in this well-meaning but not good way that it was because God did it to you, and the reason that God did it to you was that you were sinful and he was punishing you. Jesus came along and just wiped all that out and showed that God made us good, and that God's will for us is always love. And so if we're suffering from something that is not God's will or God's doing, God's will for us is always health, safety, love, feeling whole, feeling at one with God, this infinite love that is God.
And so if we're off track in our thinking, and I love that, I think we're coming from the same place that I've understood the word, the original source of the word sin simply meant off the mark, as opposed to evil, bad, wicked. But it was off the mark, and it was a call out in archery practices of, yep, you hit the target, or nope, you didn't. If we're like torqued out of shape with off-target thinking, it's not like anything that is a higher force is punishing us for off-target thinking any more than if I drive slightly off the edge of the highway where they've got those zoom strips. It's not punishing me that it goes, wah! It's just sort of reminding me to get back in the middle of the lane.
Right. It's like it's our holding on to unconstructive, hateful, envious thinking that is, it's like holding on to a hot coal. It'll burn you until you let go of it. And so it's the sin, it's the off-target thinking that's punishing itself. It's like, you know, as long as I believe that one of the multiplication facts is wrong, I'm going to get wrong results until I realize the truth. So it's not that math is punishing me. It's that I need to learn something.
Nice. And I'm sorry, I had put you mentally on hold. You were going to share a story about healing fear.
Oh, yes. There was a time where I had a painful infection, and it had gone on for a few days, and it was making me afraid.
Yep.
And I started reaching out to divine love, to God, my father, mother, God, for a higher sense of things. And the help came in terms of some questions. And this is, I'm just going to take a brief side note here. This is the Christ at work. The human Jesus is not here anymore, but the Christ, which is the understanding of God, God communicating himself right to the human consciousness, that's still here, this truth that is God itself communicating itself to us when we're listening and open, and sometimes even when we're not listening, it'll communicate.
Yeah.
But in this case, it came in terms of questions.
And just, I'm going to break in for another moment. So it's not really like I hear in our language all the time of Jesus Christ, as if Jesus was the only Christ, but it was that the person Jesus embodied that which is Christ.
Yes, that's
such a
good explanation. That's right. The Christ, we might say, is everything that Jesus knew and embodied about God and about spiritual reality. Well, that didn't go away when he went away. That's still here. And it's still communicating to us. God is communicating to us. And that communication we might call the Christ. So here's how I heard those some helpful questions. The first one was, I was thinking about the fear. And the first one was, is God afraid right now?
Ooh, nice.
And I thought, immediately, no. And the next question was, why not? Why is God not afraid? And I thought, well, because God is all-powerful, so there's no other power but God. God is all-good, so all-powerful and all-good together means evil cannot stand up to God, and there's no place for it. And then God is all life, so there's no other form of life fighting against God. And God is all substance. And what that came to me as is that this spiritual life and truth and love that is God, that's indestructible. That's all powerful. Well, that's substance then, because if something's indestructible and ever-present, that's substantial, even though we can't see it with our eyes. And then the next question, so I got it straight, why God's not afraid. All God is unopposed, the only power, all good, life itself, all substance, indestructible. And then the last question was, well, if God is not afraid, and I'm in God, because God is everywhere, I'm actually made of God's qualities, how could I be afraid? And I thought, oh, I'm not. And that was the end of it. The infection was gone. So I just got this feeling of like being a drop of water in the ocean of God's love. And that drop of water couldn't be different from the ocean, couldn't move a different direction or have some different quality than the ocean. So that ocean of God's goodness was just what I'm made of, and there could be nothing else there. and that infection was just gone right then.
I got a lot more I want to talk about this. I want to break away for just a second so that we can identify our station. But first, I want to express my gratitude to the First Church of Christ Science Mill Valley and a coordinating sponsorship for Spiritual Perspectives across a board of 50 churches that have all coordinated to bring us Spiritual Perspectives, to bring it to you and me, and that I get this fabulous education. So I want to mention, do check out the Christian Science Reading Rooms or the Christian Science Churches in your area to find out where they're online or where they're in person. And you can go look at spirituality.com and christianscience.com. They invite you to come wander in. I've done it without identifying myself, and nobody has, like, descended upon me or attacked me. They just, you know, if it's a reading room, they've just said, anything I can help you with? And I've said, no, I just want to look. And they've said, great, and they go back to what they're doing. So I've found it to be a very safe place to go explore. Meanwhile, let's identify our station, and we'll be right back with Ann Nealon. Hey, if you're hearing that music, you know we're in the midst of an edition of Spiritual Perspectives. Spiritual Perspectives, where we take a look at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. I'm Scout Bartlett, your host. We will archive this program on www.ifidknownthen.com. And I want to reintroduce our guest. We're talking today with Ann Nealon, who lives up in beautiful Marin County. And we're just moving into really exploring, as some friends of mine like to refer to it, fear, false evidence appearing real. So, Ann, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
There's a fun place I want to toss in because I've got so much I want to talk about. And that's, we were talking earlier about where they're referencing the man Jesus who embodied the Christ and things that he taught. And I noticed at one place he had the audacity, courage, wherewithal. He had the wherewithal to step in front of a whole group of people who were so stuck in their own thought process that they were looking to pick up rocks and kill somebody, and he had the nerve to step in front of them and actually bring enough love without scolding anybody, without terrorizing anybody, without getting in anybody's face, without beating anybody up, but he got that whole mob to forget their mob mentality and come back to more aligned.
The one I'm thinking of is when the woman was caught right in the act of adultery, and they were, the Mosaic law said that she should be stoned to death. And
yep.
He, as you said, he just changed that whole atmosphere by saying, okay, the one who is without sin can be the first one to throw a stone. And then I love the way he was just so full of grace. He just stooped down on the ground and wrote in the dust. He wasn't in their face. He just let the truth of that Christly thought kind of sink into consciousness without being confrontational. And the Bible says that the oldest went away first, probably those who were most aware of their shortcomings, and down to the young bucks who probably had stones in hand. And eventually all the accusers were gone, and he said, didn't anyone condemn you? And she said, no man, Lord. And he said, neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more.
Yeah.
I found that so helpful when somebody, you know, even in something as mundane as does something bad in traffic that inconveniences me, I come back to that spot of, have you ever been in that position, Anne, where maybe your children were distracting you for a moment and you did something silly in driving? Well, then, yes, you have, and so don't condemn them.
And so here we are at a moment in time where the polarization on societies and planets is dramatic. I'll just gently put it that way. And that's why that story came to mind of being able to stand firm in one's belief without having to adopt the opposite polarity and get in their face. So all of this is fear-driven. And so let's start with the easy part, Ann. How would you define fear?
I was just thinking about that recently, and I guess one of the things that I think makes me afraid is the feeling that when I feel incorrectly that evil is as real as good and maybe even more powerful. And
yeah.
And maybe the evil seems to be embodied in someone. Someone that is saying or doing things that seem so counterproductive to the fabric of society, or to my way of thinking how things would be best moved forward. And then the temptation is to think, well, it's evil is not only as real as good and maybe more powerful, but it is, now it's that person who is the evil. And then we begin to get locked into our polarized views instead of realizing that, as the Hebrew prophet Malachi said in the Bible, have we not all one Father? Has not one God created us? I was thinking one day, you know, Jesus' prayer that he taught his disciples to pray and that Christian churches still pray today, many people know as the Our Father prayer, I know as the Lord's Prayer. The first two words, Our Father, I thought one day, you know, he didn't have to say it that way. He could have said, My Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. He was God's son. Why did he say our Father? Why did he choose that word our? It had to be, at least as I've reasoned it out, so that we would know that we all have the same Father that he does, that he did, and therefore we're siblings. We're his sons and daughters, God love her sons and daughters. And I think that sense of Jesus knowing that everyone has God as our father, mother, was how he could heal, how he could go have dinner in the house of a Pharisee. And now the Pharisees were some of the main people that got him crucified. And before then, we see him at dinner in the home of a prominent Pharisee. Well, that would be the polar opposite politically of Jesus' teachings.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Pharisees were so convinced that they alone knew what was right and that everyone else was dead wrong. And so Jesus goes to dinner in his house deliberately. So there he's acting out his Christ sense of our Father, that no one is irredeemable. All are God's children. There's good in everyone.
So I'm going to loop around to even bigger topics, Anne, because I want to touch in on this. I like to touch this periodically to make sure that people understand that they're not understanding. We're here in the midst of a novel virus, a brand new virus, and it's traveling through people. And there are a lot of questions about whether or not, I rephrase, and I've seen people have the missed notion that Christian Science somehow tells people they're not allowed to go to a doctor or they're not allowed to use Western medicine. And I know it's a touchy topic because it's been so misconstrued, but can we touch in on that notion for a moment?
Yes, that's so helpful. I'm glad you brought that up.
Thanks.
I think Christian Science is known in public thought as those people who don't go to doctors. I would say more accurately, it's those who have found the omnipotence and love of God to be the most effective healing method in the globe, and these are intelligent people who, if something is not working would not stick with it. So these are people who found a significant track record of successful, effective healing in relying solely on God instead of on forms of healing that Christ Jesus did not use. He relied solely on God, even though there were physicians of that day. The fact is that the Christian Science Church doesn't try to control the decisions and actions of its members. Students of Christian Science are free at any time to use whatever form of care they feel will be most effective. And at this particular time, when public health authorities and many others feel that vaccinations are helpful protection, and the more people who are vaccinated, the better. And the truth is that the Christian Science Church does not tell its members what to do. And they have, for more than a century, counseled respect for public health authorities and conscientious obedience to the laws of the land, including those requiring vaccination, and reporting suspected communicable diseases, obeying quarantines, and cooperating with what public health officials require. Mary Baker Eddy, the founder of Christian Science, wrote that where the law requires that your children be vaccinated, have them vaccinated, and then make sure that your thought is in such a relationship to God that you know that it cannot harm them. And so...
Could I get you to repeat that, Ann?
Yes.
Just because nobody can rewind on radio, and that was really powerful.
Yes. Here's what she wrote. Where vaccination is compulsory, let your children be vaccinated. And see that your mind is in such a state that by your prayers, vaccination will do the children no harm.
Nice.
And I am aware of many students of Christian Science currently who have chosen to be vaccinated for various reasons, and not because they feel it will be a protection for themselves. Because the most important protection, the most effective protection, as Mrs. Eddy's statement implies, is our relationship to God as the only power, all good, and made us spiritual, pure, and good, and would never allow evil to have the upper hand or to enter one of his own children. And to the extent that we honestly know that, it has that effect. It is totally protective. And yet, I know many, many of my friends and fellow church members have chosen to be vaccinated to cooperate with the local health authorities, to allay the fears of their family members, to meet requirements of their employers. Perhaps someone, as I, needs to go into skilled nursing facilities or hospitals to meet with patients, and a vaccination is required for that. Or if someone is going into prison systems to minister, vaccinations are being required at times. And so to meet the need to allay fear and to lovingly minister to our fellow man, many Christian Scientists are choosing to be vaccinated while knowing that it has no power to harm them. Yeah. And that it all, and that also God is the supreme power that is our protection. So there is a great sense of respect and golden rule love among Christian Scientists, of doing unto others as we would have them do unto us. And there's also a hope and expectation among Christian Scientists that our efforts and prayers aren't just to help ourselves, but everyone affected by contagion and disease around the globe.
Yeah, not just against something, but focused toward something.
Exactly, yes.
So for everybody that we just brought up fear in this conversation, well, I'll just drop this in. And when you're looking at you or even looking with a client where they're locked up in fear, where can we begin to release or untangle that?
Well, I'll begin that with what we've just been talking about. I have permission to share this. I've had more than one person call me recently saying that they needed to be vaccinated. This is something they had never thought they would be doing because they have relied on God exclusively for their health care needs, and they wanted to be free from fear from the possible effects, ill effects of vaccination. Mm-hmm. So I'll loop in here another client who I've been given permission to share called me concerned because family members had visited their family over the holidays, and those family members had been ill from COVID, and then this individual came down with symptoms which he was fearful about.
Yep.
And when we first talked, those symptoms were obvious over the phone. And so the first place I went in all three cases, each treatment is individual, but there's a commonality, is to start with God always. And because knowing God as all power and all presence and all love, and actually unpacking those ideas destroys the fear. So take someone with the vaccination fear. God being all power and all good, nothing else can have power for evil in our thought and therefore in our body, because God's goodness and all power is ever present and is supreme. And the law of this situation is that God's goodness is acted out in his loved child, not evil, and that something done out of a sense of duty or love for one's fellow man cannot harm one. There's a sentence in the Christian Science textbook, whatever it is your duty to do, you can do without harm to yourself.
Ooh.
And
whatever it is that is your duty to do, you can do without harm to yourself.
Yes.
Which is sort of getting back to God being almighty, not just sort of mighty.
That's right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which I borrowed from Fujiko Science.
I love that from Fujiko Science. God is almighty, not just sort of mighty. That's what overcomes fear. And if a listener wants to have a copy of the book, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, you can find it at any Christian Science reading room and online at christianscience.com. The first step, the Christian Science textbook says, in Christian Science prayerful treatment is to allay the fear of patients. It's always about fear. And the way we allay fear is to realize that there's something bigger and more powerful than what seems to be making us afraid. It's like in the Bible, in one of the Psalms, it says, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. And so this sense of this understanding of God as infinite, filling all space. Actually, Mrs. Eddy, who healed like nobody since Jesus, she raised people from death. She healed cancers, blindness, an eyeball that had been destroyed, broken bones, insanity. The list goes on and on.
That meets that Midwestern show me requirement.
Yes. She was asked one time how she did that, and she said, I saw the love of God encircling the universe and man, filling all space.
Mm.
Just think, I thought, how big that sense of love is. It's not just our globe or our solar system or our galaxy. The universe, bigger than the universe. which is known to be infinite or hasn't been explored yet fully. So that's how big God's love is, encircling the universe, including man. So when we begin to feel the bigness, the infinity of God's love and power and presence, then whatever is making us afraid just dissolves. It's like throwing that bucket of water on the Wicked Witch of the West and the Wizard of Oz. It's the love, the presence, the power of God. And in the case of someone who seemed to be suffering from severe symptoms, and congestion was one of them, I worked particularly with that idea of God being all presence. So where it seemed like there was some sort of noxious something crowding out in a part of our body, I thought, God is all presence. Literally all presence is love, is pure, powerful goodness and truth. There's no space where God has already taken all the room there is for evil to crowd in and overwhelm. So I just knew that all that could be in God's child was the goodness and the love and the pure power of God. And he called, I can't remember, it was on a Monday or a Tuesday, and we prayed each day. And on Friday, he called and he said, well, on Thursday, he said, I'm much, much better, and I could hear that he was. And on Friday, he called and said, I don't need any more treatment. I'm going for a hike.
Nice. So just there is a word. There is a word I want to touch into real quickly, Anne, which is when you use the word pray, when you pray, what's that process? What's that word mean for you in you?
That's such a good question. First, I'll tell you the end result, and then I'll tell you how I get there. The end result is that instead of this big thing, this big fear in my thought, will be this big thing, God, in my thought. The allness, the power, the majesty, the love, the presence, the truth of God, the love of God, will have displaced the fear as the result of the... It's like the light being turned on in a dark room. My consciousness or the room will be filled with light, and there'll be no more darkness in it. Well, the way I get there, it's various. There's no one way. Sometimes it is thinking. It begins with thinking about what I know to be true about God. And sometimes when I'm so afraid, I'll think, what do you know for sure is true about God? And I'll think of one time that maybe a healing that I've had, or one time that I have felt this sense of this love that is beyond human love. And I'll think, I know for sure that God is love. And then I'll begin to reason from that. Well, if God is love, what does that mean? And, well, that means that God is loving me. God is loving this other individual if it involves someone else. God is, and then I'll work with those, God is all-powerful, so love is all-powerful. So sometimes it's reasoning. Sometimes it's listening. Father, how could I praise you right now? How could I feel your presence right now? And then I'll just be really quiet. And I'll hear a quiet thought, like, I'm right here. I'm loving you. I'm holding your hand. Metaphorically speaking, that's just so helpful for me to think that God is right here, that I'm in God's arms. And then sometimes it's, remember one time I'd been praying a long time, well, it was hours anyway, about feeling so sick. It was like yielding. I just said, Father, I'm your little lamb, and you're my shepherd. I am your little child, and you're my father, mother. And I just felt like a little toddler just going, getting relaxed in my mother's arms. And it was at that point in that situation that the healing thoughts just were told to me then. God is everywhere, so all that's here is God. God is good, so all that's here is good.
Sweet.
And just immediately I was free from that nausea and headache that I'd been struggling with for hours. So sometimes it begins with thinking, reasoning, clinging to what the Bible tells me of God and what I've learned from the Christian Science textbook about God.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's asking for more inspiration, more light, and listening. Sometimes it's yielding, being very childlike, very lamb-like.
Perfect. That's fabulous. Thank you so much. Everyone, I want to reintroduce. We've been talking with Anne Neeland, K-N-E-E, Neeland. You can find more of her online. She's been published in the Christian Science Journal as well as on the Christian Science Sentinel programs. And thank you so very much for being with us today. This has been fabulous.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Scout.
You're welcome. This is Scout Bartlett asking you all two favors. One, treat yourself as a loved one because you truly are. And no matter where on earth you are, just notice it's a perfect day to have a great day on purpose.